Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. It is a chilly Saturday. Tom Schroyer is off today. Our guest host, John Rossman. John, how are you?
Steve, I'm doing really well. And yourself?
Steve, I'm doing really well. And yourself?
It's very good trying to stay warm, John, like all of us. We're all wearing our long sleeves and our sweaters today.
But it's great weather to go skating or skiing or sledding.
Why not?
So this is what Minnesota winters are all about.
Absolutely. Get out and enjoy it.
We have a great guest here this afternoon that I'm really excited about. It's Marcy Frost. And Marcy is an attorney, a shareholder with our firm, and she practices in the area of employment law. Marcy graduated from the University of Minnesota, magna cum laude, and she received her undergraduate degree from the University of Wisconsin. Welcome, Marcy.
Thank you.
The topic we're going to talk about this afternoon is going to be the Americans with Disabilities Act and specifically some amendments to the Act. Marcy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what exactly is the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA?
Yeah. The ADA is the federal law that protects employees from discrimination based on disability, and it covers employers with 15 or more employees, and it protects people from being discriminated against in hiring or their treatment while they're on the job, and it protects them from termination of employment because of their disability. And it also requires employers to provide them with a reasonable accommodation, which is some adjustment to their job that allows them to perform the job with their disability.
Now, you mentioned that there's a 15-employee requirement for the ADA to come into effect. How does that affect employers here in the state of Minnesota?
Well, employers in Minnesota are covered by the Minnesota Human Rights Act as long as they have one employee. So if they have fewer than 15 employees, they still have to treat people with disabilities fairly under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. But the obligation under the Minnesota Human Rights Act to provide an employee with a reasonable accommodation does not kick in until they have 15 employees. So if an employer has fewer than 15 employees, they cannot discriminate against a person because they are disabled. But if the person is unable to perform their job because of their disability, the employer is not required to make any job adjustments to allow them to perform that job.
Now, the ADA was enacted or first went into effect in 1992, and then there were some amendments that just went into effect January 1st of this year. Can you tell me a little bit about the amendments to the Act that went into effect this year?
Yeah, the amendments were motivated by the fact that the courts had severely restricted the definition of disability, and Congress was convinced by a coalition of both disability advocates and business organizations that the definition should be beefed up so that the people who were originally intended to be protected by the Act would get that protection. And so the Act did various things in order to bring more people within the coverage of the Act.
Under the amended Act, the amendments that just went into effect, how is a disability defined?
A disability is basically defined in you can be disabled in one of three ways. One is that you have an impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. The second way is that you can have a record of having an impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. So in other words, you may not have that impairment anymore, but you did in your past. For instance, somebody who had problems with their heart and has now had a heart transplant may not currently be disabled, but they have a record of the impairment, and that brings them under the protection of the Act. And then the third way is what's referred to as regarded as having an impairment, and that is a major change between the old statute and the amendments. There has always been protection for somebody who is regarded as having an impairment, but prior to the amendment, they had to be regarded as having an impairment that substantially limited a major life activity. And now they just need to be regarded as having an impairment.
Can you give me an example of what would fall under the classification of someone being regarded as having an impairment?
Yeah. Somebody who has, for instance, crossed eyes. That person has an impairment. They have a physiological condition that affects their sense organ, their eyes. So they have an impairment, but they may not be substantially limited in the major life activity of seeing. But they might be regarded as the employer might look at them and see those crossed eyes and think, oh, somebody whose eyes look like that couldn't possibly be able to see. And so we're not going to give them a job because we want people to be able to read the papers we put in front of them. And even though the person actually could have read those papers, they're regarded as by the employers not being able to read those papers. That would have brought somebody in under either the old statute or the new statute. The way it's changed now is if the employer says, "No, I'm sure they can see just fine. I understand. I see that they have crossed eyes, but that doesn't affect the way they can see." As long as the employer views them as having that impairment, the physiological condition of their eyes, now they've met the definition of a disability.
Is it difficult to prove that someone didn't get a job using that example? Does this amendment now make it easier for someone in that situation to maybe prove that that's why they didn't get the job? Does it give them more ammunition, if you will?
Well, it should not make it easier for them to prove that the disability is why they did not get the job. It has always been the case that you first have to prove, as the employee, you have to prove that you're disabled. Then you have to prove that there has been some effect. For instance, you got fired or you weren't hired, that there was some adverse action taken against you. And then the final step has always been you have to prove that that step was taken because of your disability. That aspect of it is the same now as it always has been. The trick is, in the past, a lot of plaintiffs who brought claims in court got thrown out on the very first step because they couldn't even show they were disabled. So we never got to the issue of whether the employer made the decision based on the disability, because you got thrown out before you ever got to that stage. So employers are going to be more in the position of having to prove that their reason for taking their action was not discriminatory. The burden is actually on the plaintiff, but the employer needs to come up with a reason, and they need to be able to support that.
Marcy, one thing you mentioned a little bit ago was a major life activity and the fact that this impairment has to affect a major life activity. What exactly is defined under the amended act as being a major life activity that has to be affected by the impairment?
Yeah, well, under the previous act, under the statute, there was actually no definition of major life activity, but it was defined in the regulations. And before the amendment, which now has added a definition, it was originally caring for oneself, performing manual tasks, walking, seeing, hearing, speaking, breathing, and learning, and working. And now they've added in that, so that was a definition in the regulations. Now the statute itself has that definition in it, and it adds eating, sleeping, standing, lifting, bending, reading, concentrating, thinking, and communicating. So that's one aspect of the change. The other change is that they have added a list of bodily functions so that the bodily function itself is considered a major life activity. So if your body does that function, is limited in that function, or does it in a substantially different way, then you are going to be disabled without showing any other effect on your life activities.
We are talking about the very important topic of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the amendment that went into effect on January 1st, 2009. Marcy Frost is joining us today. John Rossman is our guest host. Tom Schroyer has a day off today. We invite you to call the program if you have any questions about this. As always, 612-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. It is Minnesota Law, and as always, it's presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. We'll be back in a moment here on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. John Rossman is our host today. I'm Steve Thompson. Marcy Frost is our guest attorney today on the program. The Americans with Disabilities Act and the amendment to that act that went into effect on January 1st, 2009, in the spotlight.
Thanks, Steve. Marcy, I know you mentioned before the break a little bit about reasonable accommodations and the requirement for employers to make reasonable accommodations for employees who have some type of impairment. Can you speak a little bit about exactly what a reasonable accommodation is?
Yeah, a reasonable accommodation is, a change in the person's job or the way that they are able to do their job that allows them to perform the essential functions of the job. So the first step is to define what the essential functions of the job are. Sometimes you have to do things as part of your job that aren't really key to your job. You know, you might have to go and get the coffee for somebody, but that's not the essential part of your job. So one thing that you can do to make a reasonable accommodation is if your problem, for whatever reason it is, you can't pour the coffee, that's not an essential function of the job. We just take that part of the job away from you, and now you can do everything. Another way is to provide equipment that allows you to do the job. So, for instance, if something needs to be moved from point A to point B, the important thing is that it gets moved to point A from point A to point B. It's not necessarily that you carry it. So maybe the accommodation is we give you a cart and you can now push the cart instead of carrying it. So those are common ways of accommodating. Sometimes giving somebody a short leave of absence can be a reasonable accommodation. And when all else fails and there's nothing that can be done that would allow the person to perform the essential functions of their job, the employer is required to look to see if there are any vacant positions within the company that the person could perform. And then they are supposed to give that person that position. But they do not have to create a position. It's literally if there is an open position. Then that person can provide, then transferring them to that position would be a reasonable accommodation.
So to be clear, from an employer standpoint, if I'm an employer and I have an employee who is disabled or has some type of impairment and I cannot provide a reasonable accommodation that will allow them to meet their goal of, say, making 50 widgets an hour, can I terminate that employee?
Yes, and that's a good example. If you are required to make 50 widgets an hour and because of your disability you just can't work that quickly, and there's nothing the employer can do to change the way the equipment works to put the widgets together, there's nothing they can do, and there are no other vacant jobs, under the rubric of the ADA, you would not be considered a qualified individual with a disability, and the employer is only protected to the person who is a qualified individual with a disability is protected. So the employer is not required to keep somebody on the job who cannot do the job, as long as they've explored the reasonable accommodation, if the person has requested one, and found that there is no reasonable accommodation they can do without having an undue hardship on the employer.
Our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We go to the phones. John in Coon Rapids, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I understand there was an amendment with this that includes epilepsy. That's the first part of my question. The next part, as far as a reasonable accommodation and your pay, can it be made substantially less if that epilepsy affects your job? And how does a collective bargaining agreement come into play?
Okay, well, as to epilepsy, there isn't anything specific in the statute that now automatically says that, you know, epileptics are covered. But I think that one of the amendments that makes it clear that an episodic or sporadic condition can be covered if the person would be disabled while that condition was in place, I think that may be something that would be helpful for epileptics in order to get under the definition of disability. As to a reasonable accommodation, I'm not quite sure I understood what you were saying about the pay, but if you're talking about transferring somebody to another job because they're unable to perform their job, the employer should first be looking for a job that has comparable pay. If there is a job that's vacant that the person can do where there's comparable pay, that's the job they should be transferred to. But if there is no job that they can be transferred to for comparable pay, and they're going to have to do a completely different job, the employer does not have to continue to pay them at the higher rate for that job. And then the last part of your question had to do with collective bargaining agreements. And generally, collective bargaining agreements don't change anything under the law. If the law says you have to do something or you can't do something, collective bargaining agreement can't change that. But one of the issues that's come up under the ADA with collective bargaining agreements has been seniority. And can you transfer somebody to a position where the collective bargaining agreement says they wouldn't be entitled to that position? And the new law, the amendments doesn't address that. But under the prior law, the courts were not generally, at least in this circuit, requiring employers to ignore the collective bargaining agreement.
Marcy, I think the caller raises an interesting question that I wanted to discuss, and that was whether or not if an employee has some type of impairment which can be treated with medication, for instance, a seizure disorder, and if through medication that impairment can be treated to a point where the employee is at a point where he or she can perform their job functions, does that person still qualify as disabled under the amended act?
Yeah, that's another important way that the act would affect somebody with epilepsy. Under the prior law, if somebody was taking medication, the determination of whether they were substantially impaired in a major life activity or substantially limited in a major life activity was considered with what they're like on their medication. The law now is, under the ADAAA, that you consider what they would be like if they weren't on that medication.
Our phone number on the program is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We don't have time right now to be fair to another call, but we will take more calls coming up following our news and weather break. Once again, our guest host today, John Rossman, our guest attorney, Marcy Frost, on the topic of the American with Disabilities Amendment Act, which took effect on January 1st, 09. We'll have much more on this topic. Hopefully time for Marty's call coming up following the news and weather break here as well. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. It is available online anytime at moss-barnett.com. That's moss-barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law. John Rossman, our host, our guest attorney today. Marcy Frost, the topic, the Americans with Disabilities Amendment Act. We've had a number of calls. The phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Your calls are always welcome on the program. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. We go to the phones right now. Marty in Rush City, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting, Marty.
No problem. Great show. My question is, quick background, I was injured in an auto accident a little over 2 years ago. I was rear-ended and injured my back. Found out I had a prior existing back condition unknown, which won't allow the injury to heal. Worked for a small company, a railroad engineer, for a company of less than 15. But I was curious, as with this new ADA amendment, how will that affect, if it will, any correlation with those of us trying to attain disability benefits and how the guidelines in the government is to be able to issue any benefits at this point. It's been over 2 years, and I'm still unable to attain any benefits.
Well, the ADA, in its prior form and as amended, has a definition of disability that is completely apart and separate from the definition under the Social Security laws and also under most private insurance for disability. So whereas your back condition now would probably be much easier to be considered a disability under the ADA, it is not going to have any effect on your Social Security issues.
All right, very good. Marty, we hope that helps. Let's go to Scott in Maple Plain. Scott, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good. Trying to stay warm.
Yes, it is true. See, I had a question. Let's say your lifestyle, let's say you're a smoker, you were hired as an able body, and throughout the course of you working there, you created, for an example, lung cancer, and you weren't able to do your job, what would that fall under? Would the employer have to make accommodations for you at that point if it was your own, let's say, your own fault that you got into that?
Yeah, the definition of disability does not take into account how you became disabled. So the person who has lung cancer and meets the definition of disability is going to be covered in the same way whether they got it because they're a smoker or they got it because of all of the other reasons people can end up with lung cancer. So the cause of the disability is not a factor at all. So if you are disabled because of your lung condition, then the employer, if you make a request for a reasonable accommodation, so if that's affecting your ability to do the job, then you make a request for a reasonable accommodation. The employer would have to make it if there is a reasonable accommodation that would allow you to do the job and does not cause an undue hardship on the employer. And that undue hardship concept is a pretty high burden for employers.
Yeah, thank you very much to the caller. Marcy, one thing I wanted to follow up on that you had mentioned earlier was the inclusion of concentrating, thinking, and communicating under the amended act and these specific categories. And I was thinking a little bit about what these categories might include. Would these include issues such as someone who, say, can't get along with people, someone who simply can't get along with their boss, can't get along with their coworkers because they can't communicate, or possibly a person who suffers from stress as a result of their job, possibly either due to they're in a high-stress job or due to maybe even like a seasonal affective disorder where it's something that only part of the year they're affected by stress?
Okay. Well, first of all, if somebody has a problem, say, with communicating, under the amendment, that person has a major life activity that's substantially limited, but it doesn't get rid of the requirement that there be an impairment that's causing it. So you would have to have some sort of either physical or, more likely in this scenario, a mental condition that is causing the problems with communication. So if you can't get along with other people because you're just a difficult person with a lousy personality, you're not going to be covered. But if you can't get along with people because you have a mental condition that makes you hypersensitive to anything somebody says that might be possibly considered to be remotely critical, and your mental condition doesn't allow you to process that properly, and therefore it's too difficult to communicate with people, then you are going to have a much easier time being covered under the Act now than you would have before the amendments, because communicating is specifically listed as a major life activity. So you don't have to go through, you as the employee, wouldn't have to go through the legal exercise of proving that communicating is a major life activity or that it is affecting some other major life activity like your ability to work.
What about the issue of stress? And this kind of ties in with the last caller. What if something comes up during the course of your job, whether you caused it yourself or whether it's something that was caused by outside factors, such as stress, that doesn't allow you to perform your job anymore?
Well, the stress is likely going to be considered a disability, but you have to remember that the protection is for a qualified individual with a disability, and the employer has to be able to reasonably accommodate it. And oftentimes, there's just no way to get rid of the stress on the job. You're not required to say, you know, that you don't have to listen to your boss anymore because he stresses you out. You know, if that's part of the job and there's no way around that, then the employer isn't required to, you know, they're not required to give you the top of the reporting structure just because you can't handle reporting to other people.
Who would make the determination as to whether or not it's truly a disability that causes this type of condition, either the inability to communicate or stress? I mean, who would make that determination?
Well, ultimately, it would be a court that would make that determination. What the employer, when faced with the problem, is going to have to decide is whether they can accommodate it. Because if it can be accommodated, it's much better, especially now under the amendments, for the employer to do that accommodation and not worry about whether you really were disabled or not. Because you don't know if someone's disabled, typically, until a court tells you so. That's not where the employer wants to be.
Is it acceptable for the employer to say, bring me a note from your doctor?
Yes. An employer can require medical certification of a condition, although that's generally not what I would advise an employer to do. Because, again, if the person can be accommodated, it's better to just go ahead and do the accommodation and not have all the medical information. Because once you have all that medical information about somebody, now let's say you've done the accommodation and they're going along in their job and the employer decides to terminate their employment because they're just not doing the job well or we don't need that job done anymore. Now the person's going to claim, oh, you terminated my employment because you knew I was disabled.
I see.
So you're just adding more information to them. It's kind of a... sometimes from the employer's perspective, less information is better.
That makes sense. We had talked a little bit earlier about a trilogy of cases, Supreme Court cases, that the amended act overturned. Can you speak briefly to what those cases held and how the amended act overturned them?
Yeah, this was a trilogy of cases from back in 1999, and they all involved people who claimed that they were disabled, and the employers or prospective employers claimed that they were not, because when you took into account the mitigating measures that they had, they were no longer disabled. So one case involved actually twin sisters who wanted to be pilots, and they had poor eyesight, and they had corrective lenses, and the airlines had a policy that you had to have uncorrected vision at a certain level. Another case involved someone with high blood pressure, but the medication kept it under control. And the third case was an interesting one that involved somebody who basically could only see out of one eye, and his brain had made adjustments that allowed him to have more depth perception than one would typically have with just one eye. And the court said that these people were not substantially limited in their major life activities, because when you consider the effects of the glasses and the blood pressure medication and the brain's own compensation, they weren't substantially limited anymore. The ADAAA really attacked those cases, and it did it in three different ways. It attacked it in the findings section of the ADAAA and said that those cases were basically not what Congress had wanted. They attacked it in the purposes section of the ADAAA, saying it is our intent that those cases aren't going to fly anymore. And then they added a section that talked about the construction of the definition of disability and specifically said that the ameliorative effect of mitigating measures are not to be considered, with the slight exception of normal regular eyeglasses and contacts. You're allowed to consider those.
Marcy, can you give me an example of someone or a type of condition that under the old act would not be considered disabled, but under the amended act would be considered disabled?
Myself. I'm somebody who probably would not have been covered under the act and probably would be now. I have a bad back. I had surgery a couple years ago, and I can't lift anything. Carrying my cat hurts my back, and I have pain shooting down my leg. Under the old regime, I would have had to have shown that I have an impairment, which I do have an impairment, but I would have had to show that it substantially limited a major life activity. Lifting or carrying weight was not listed as a major life activity. Things could be a major life activity that weren't listed, but it was a struggle to prove it. And so usually people would have to show that they were limited in the activity of working, and that requires that you be taken out of a whole class of jobs and a broad range of jobs, and it's much harder to prove. Now, lifting is specifically a major life activity, and so it's going to be much easier for me to show that I'm disabled. Now, that doesn't do me much good unless I can prove that my employer took some sort of action against me because of that disability.
Our program will continue in a moment. We have a couple of calls lined up. Carolyn and John will try to get to those calls momentarily. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Our phone number on the program, as always, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. John Rossman is the host on the program today. Tom Schroyer is away. Marcy Frost is our guest attorney today. The Americans with Disabilities Amendment Act will continue in a moment on 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. John Rossman, our host today. Marcy Frost, our guest attorney. The Americans with Disabilities Act Amendment Act, ADAAA. I finally got it here at the end of the program, Marcy. You've done a great job today. We've had a lot of calls. We'll go to one of those calls right now. We go to John in St. Paul. John, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi, John.
Hi, I have a question for you. I am an owner of a small construction company, and I have an employee who does some interior work. He does some painting. He has to carry, sometimes has to carry 12-foot ladder, move things up to maybe 30 pounds or so. He has called in or left work over 20 times in the last year. I have specific projects and deadlines that I require him for. It's becoming very difficult for me to meet my dates. And the problem is that he actually, at one point, was warned and went to his physician, and his physician gave him a diagnosis of fibromyalgia and excused him from his tardiness and missed work days. But then I decided to put him in another position at a desk job, which required less physical activity, so I could fill my construction position, which I need to fulfill my contracts with my clients. And then, because he didn't want to do that, his doctor rescinded his disability of fibromyalgia. So now this continues. Is there anything I can do?
Well, I guess my first question to you would be, do you have 15 employees?
I have three.
You have three employees. Okay, so there's no reasonable accommodation requirement on you. And actually, you wouldn't be covered under the ADA, but you're a Minnesota employer, so you would be covered under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. You are not permitted to make decisions about him based on his disability, but you are always allowed to make decisions based on his job performance. And so that's where you should be focusing your attention, is on his job performance. When you transferred him to that other position, that becomes a kind of a sticky widget, because you weren't required to transfer him because you didn't have an obligation to reasonably accommodate him. But then the question would be... I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
He never actually even went to that position, because after he found out he didn't want to do it, then he got his doctor to write him a new note.
Well, so the issue would be whether he can perform the job that he was in, carrying the ladders and doing that lifting. If he can perform the job, then he performs the job. If he can't perform the job, then you have no obligation to continue to employ him. And you are allowed to have reasonable expectations about somebody's attendance. Somebody who cannot regularly show up to work is generally not going to be considered to be a qualified employee, because that's not something you're generally going to be able to work around.
Sounds like we have real fact-specific scenario here, and it might be a good idea for the caller to consult with an attorney to go through all the specific facts and circumstances to see if there are other options or other information that might be pertinent that we just can't cover during the course of the show here.
What should business owners do? Does it fall in the category of they need to strictly define positions, detailed job descriptions? What can business owners do to comply with this Amendment Act?
Well, having detailed job descriptions is very helpful, but you need to make sure that the job descriptions talk about what needs to be accomplished and not necessarily how it needs to be accomplished. So like I talked about before, if something needs to be moved from point A to point B, you need to be able to move it from point A to point B. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to carry it from point A to point B. Another important thing that employers should do when confronted with a request for an accommodation, something that may be a different approach for employers now, is, as I said before, assume the person is disabled, then figure out whether you can make a reasonable accommodation or not. If you can make a reasonable accommodation, go ahead and do it. That way you don't end up faced with the dispute in court as to whether this was or was not a disability. And under the new law, it's going to be much easier for the plaintiff to win that. The other thing that employers are going to need to do is to make sure that they are able to give an explanation, if called upon in court, for the employment decisions that they make. So if you are going to terminate someone's employment because you think that they are not performing well, it's more important than ever that you be able to document that performance problem. And usually it's best if you're able to show that you told the person you're not performing well enough, you need to make it better. And then they don't make it better. You tell them again, you need to make it better. And then you terminate their employment, because it is going to be extremely easy now for people to get into court and to say, I'm disabled, and get to that last part of their case, which is to try to prove that you made your decision based on their disability. So employers are going to want to be able to make sure that they can justify their decisions.
Thanks, Marcy. Real quickly, Finally, you know, I heard in the news yesterday that unemployment is up to 7.2%. A lot of companies are laying off people. Do you envision seeing more lawsuits under the ADA and specifically under the amended act with the amendments that have been made?
Yes, because it's going to be easier for people to show that they were disabled, and so it's easier to make out a claim than it ever has been before.
Thanks so much for joining us, Marcy Frost, our guest attorney today, the American with Disabilities Act Amendment Act, ADAAA, and John Rossman, as always, great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon.